The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
I'm Mike Consul.
And I'm Loretta Klotfelter.
Welcome to Inside the Edition. We're here to talk about the February 2017 edition of Institutional Real Estate Americas, of which Loretta Klotfelter is editor. And among the feature stories is one headline, Transcendent Metros, Loretta, and it talks about metropolitan areas, the office market in those metropolitan areas, potentially facing some headwinds. What's the story?
So office, you know, office has had a pretty good run, but the office market's facing some headwinds coming into 2017. For instance, there's something like 50 million square feet of space expected to be completed in the development pipeline. Like, that's just a huge amount of space. And, you know, employment rate is down to about 4.7, 4.8%, depending on what month we are at the BLS survey. Tenants, you know, that's pretty much full employment. There aren't that many more people that we're going to be able to pack into these office buildings. So what we're looking at is maybe a little bit of oversupply, maybe a little bit of weak demand from tenants for additional space usage. So for an office investor, the question becomes, okay, which metros are going to survive or be best positioned in the face of these office headwinds?
Now, we have heard for years about technology, telecommuting, the economics of letting people work from home. For a long time, office investors and developers have been thinking in terms of the office is the need for office is going to diminish greatly. That hasn't really proven to be the case. And then on top of that, the people who are still in offices, they're actually doing the kind of space planning that has their workers dedicating less and less space per worker. So with all of that, at the same time, what we have seen is that the office market has done well, but now is facing some headwinds. I mean, is any of that coming into play in terms of maybe some softness in the market? Is technology driving any of this? Is the consolidation of space driving any of this? Or is it simply that they've overbuilt to a certain degree?
I would say mostly all of the above. The overbuilding, you know, I hesitate to call it overbuilding, but there is a lot of building. I think a lot of what's happened on that front is that for many years there was not enough building. Post-global financial crisis, there was just a complete shutdown of office development. You couldn't get loans to do it, you know, the credit crunch, lenders pulled back. So we have, you know, we did have quite a few years of sort of pent-up demand for new office space. But, you know, it takes a while to build a building, and kind of everyone's sort of delivering right now as we kind of come out of the GFC. And so, yeah, we're going to have a little bit more space than we need. That's really, I think, what we're looking at. And, you know, some of this is cyclical, some of this is structural. You know, some of it's just sort of business cycle, developers build too much, and then, you know, like that's just your business typical. But we also have what's happening. You talked about technology, automation, artificial intelligence effects, coupled with the trend toward open office space and fewer, you know, square feet per employee. Just, you know, the demand is just not as strong as it has been in the past. And this is going to be, I think, a year of weak demand from tenants for new leases. Now, I mean, most people still are going to, you know, continue to use their office space. We're not talking about any sort of major slowdown, but it's going to be a situation where investors want to pick their markets carefully.
And that leads me to my next question. Geography, of course, always comes into play. There must be certain markets that are doing just fine in terms of the amount of occupancy they've got and the amount of space that's available on the market. What cities are under the most pressure right now?
Well, I would flip that around and talk about which cities are actually in best position right now.
Okay.
And what that is the New South, the Southwest, the Mountain Region. So we're talking Dallas, we're talking Denver, we're talking Raleigh, North Carolina, Charlotte, North Carolina, Atlanta, Nashville, Austin, Salt Lake City. You know, these are markets that are a little bit lower cost. These are still secondary markets, but I think the key to keep in mind is that not every secondary market is created equal. And so what you want is to focus on secondary markets with good population growth, good job growth, and a more highly educated workforce. You know, markets with a good university system, markets that, you know, sort of are drawing from the technology industry, that have that sort of tenant base. That's what you're looking for. You don't want just any secondary market. You want one where the people and the jobs are growing.
Mm-hmm. And the rap against secondary markets has long been that when you lose an anchor tenant, it's a thin market there to try to replace that. But Dallas is a world apart from Salt Lake City, let's say. Dallas has got a lot of big companies, and they seem to be attracting more all the time. Or take Houston, Texas as well, another big secondary market.
Well, I wouldn't take Houston.
Why is that?
With the collapse in the oil market in the last 2 years, the price of the oil has halved, and Houston has its own problems that are sort of separate from what's been going on in all of the other Southwest and Texas markets. Just a huge amount of struggle, lots of empty space, lots of sublet space on the market, because a lot of these energy companies, they're based out of Texas, and not just Texas, but they're based in Houston. It's an oil town, and it's, you know, when your primary industry suffers a bit of a blow, you see a pretty big pullback. So, you know, prices in Houston really softened. Sublet space went way up. You know, open space went way up. We are starting to see some more transactions in Houston. Parkway properties merged with – so Parkway and Cousins merged and then spun off all of the properties in Houston into a separate REIT. And that was because they felt that the Houston properties were a completely separate entity that would require a different management team to handle.
So just to close the loop on the secondary markets, obviously I tripped over Houston there. I remember I had written a column a while back that I think was some incredible percentage of office space. I think it may have been as high as 40% had to do with oil and gas and related businesses.
Right.
Where Dallas is a bit more diverse. They're not so, again, an oil city, but not to the degree that Houston is.
Not to the degree. Dallas is doing great. Austin's doing great. It's really Houston that's felt the – and Denver, too, which is another big energy town, has also been doing really well recently. It really has been concentrated in Houston as far as the oil slowdown goes.
And then we can look at a secondary market like Pittsburgh, which we have a separate article in this edition saying that Pittsburgh's office market is attracting institutional investment. So what is it about Pittsburgh right now that is the big draw for big money?
Pittsburgh has the advantage of a highly educated workforce. You've got Carnegie Mellon, other world-class universities. Pittsburgh's actually, you know, Pittsburgh, of all of the Rust Belt, so-called Rust Belt cities, Pittsburgh has done the best job of retooling itself for the 21st century. You know, Pittsburgh is now a leading medical center, leading university, and there's a lot of technology companies based in Pittsburgh. And so, you know, Pittsburgh is on a very different trajectory than a lot of other Midwestern former steel towns might be considered to be on.
Mm-hmm. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that if you looked at NCREIF statistics over, say, 25 years of the major property types, I think office has actually not performed all that well. It's a property type that tends to run behind in warehouse, housing, multifamily, and what have you.
Well, and I think the thing about office is that it's just much more cyclical than, say, the apartment sector. You know, the apartment sector is a very sort of steady state. People always are looking to rent. You know, the rents might go down a little bit, but it tends to be just a lot more stable and a lot less susceptible to the sort of business cycle effects that the office market suffers the winds of.
You mentioned, we talked a little bit about Houston, the oil industry. There's not that many cities across the United States that's in the oil and gas, that's heavy into oil and gas. There are a lot of cities now that are into technology, and there are people talking about a technology bubble. So if we were to have the bottom fall out on technology, a correction there, I'm just wondering if this isn't going to have a real scattergun effect in markets across the country. I mean, you can think of, you were just talking about Pittsburgh, and then you think of Austin, Texas, Boston, the Silicon Valley, and the list goes on from there.
Right. I think that one of the things to keep in mind is that with these technology markets, with the exception of, I want to say, San Francisco, San Jose, which I think is definitely under threat if we see some sort of pullback in VC spending, unicorn bubble. I think we're all going to be watching the Snapchat IPO pretty closely this year to see just how easy it is for unicorns to leave the enchanted forest and join the public markets. But I think some of these other markets that you mentioned are just have a much more broader diversified base. I think Boston has many industries in addition to technology, as well as biotech, which tends to be on its own cycle, as well as, it's just a major financial center, like insurance. It's a gateway global city. I do think San Francisco could see some weakness, possibly Seattle. But for the most part, I think there are very few markets that are so tied to not just technology, but a particular VC-driven startup scene.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, where a lot of the concern is. It's not about, will technology companies stop existing or stop creating. It's about this sort of churning new startup formation that's being driven by a lot of venture capital money, and some of that money may pull back, may disappear. There may be some pretty big flame outs, and that could definitely put a damper on at least rental rates in San Francisco, Silicon Valley.
So what do the experts in the article say investors should be doing right now, given that there is this risk, the softening of the market?
The three recommendations are focus on top-tier markets, focus on tech-focused markets, despite concerns about any issues that might happen in sort of a short-term reaction to sort of a venture capital pullback. The tech industry is going to continue to be the engine of innovation and growth for the long term. So, as long as you're not, maybe use some sort of tech pullback as a moment to get into the market, but, for the long term, tech-focused markets are going to be your stronger markets for office. And also, interestingly enough, look at lower-cost markets, and that's particularly looking at these Sun Belt southern cities that are definitely cheaper than the top-tier markets, but still have that population growth and that job growth that you want to look for.